I'm excited. I love my self-help guests. I just gotta tell ya, when you can mix self-help with sex, nothing better, personally. Promoting two books. Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. Love the name of that. The cleanup cost can last a lifetime. Also, The Problem Was Me. How to End Negative Self-Talk and Take Your Life to a New Level. I need that one. We're talking today to Tom. I'm going to pronounce it, hopefully, right. Gagliano.
You got it good enough.
Thank God, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Close enough.
Your website, theproblemwithme.com, if you guys want to check it out. The Real Skinny on Pornography, let's talk about it, because it's been a big topic on my show. I've heard other experts come in here and talk about how kids have become almost desensitized to it because of the internet, and how many guys, for that matter, in their 20s aren't necessarily making love to women. They're fucking like they learned from pornography at age 11. So the access to the internet, would you agree, has caused this major issue with teenagers?
Absolutely. Listen, guys can control their sexual intimacy. You don't have to talk, communicate, share emotions. You go upstairs, you shut the door, you flick a switch, you look at the object you want, you get that feel good, you choke the chicken, you come back down, and you're back in the world. Absolutely, but there's many repercussions to acting this way.
And let's begin so people can really hear what those are.
Well, first of all, what is the messages you're giving your significant other? What are you telling them? They're not pretty enough, young enough, sexy enough? Do they weigh too much? What a terrible message you're giving your significant other. Plus, remember something, pornography, in my opinion, is very addictive. And like all addictions, people think they're in control of their pornography. The reality is, the pornography is in control of them. And in time, they spend more and more time on pornography. Now they're not giving that time to who they should be giving it to, their significant other, their children, and they're really betraying them. And plus, pornography could be a segue to even more dangerous actions.
True that. It's almost like you got to one-up it. Well, then let me back you up, because you said, you know, think about what message you're sending to your woman. Is she too fat? Is she unattractive anymore? Sometimes I've heard some callers say that. So
absolutely. Absolutely. How could they compete against what's on the internet?
We can't.
They can't. You know, they're on the internet. The objects on the internet are there to please whoever's viewing them. They can't compete against that. And what are you doing? You're not giving your spouse the emotional intimacy, because it affects that too. There's no communication that they deserve. What about the children? You know, people fail to remember that they're betraying their children as well. Because again, if pornography is addictive, and like all addictions, it's progressive, all of a sudden you're spending more and more time on pornography because you're looking for that perfect image, that perfect fetish. What about what you're doing to your children? Don't your children deserve some of the time that you're spending on the computer, hours on end? And that's what happens. I know this. I facilitate groups with guys that are addicted to pornography. And believe me, it's tremendously powerful.
You know, I was in a relationship once where I would have sex, and my significant other at the time, at like 3 o'clock in the morning, he wouldn't be there in the bed. And I'd go into the office and he's jerking off to porn. And I'm like,
how'd you feel?
Worthless, ugly. Mm-hmm. Like I was horrible in bed, not pretty enough, fat. I mean, all those things.
Exactly. And you know what? Let's put a couple of kids in the mix. You know, I came from a childhood when my dad was an alcoholic. And if he didn't come home at a certain time, it meant he was going to come home drunk. And it meant he was going to hurt someone. And I got to tell you, Jenny, for me, when you're that age, you don't say, oh, dad suffers from alcoholism.
No.
You say, what's the matter with me? I must be defective. I must be unlovable. Those negative core beliefs, when your parents aren't paying attention to you, even when they're working a lot, a child doesn't say, oh, gee, mom and dad are working because they're trying to save for college. And they don't say that at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
No.
They say, what's the matter with me? Doesn't mom and dad want to spend time with me? Is there something wrong with me? Even when parents die, a child may say, why did they abandon me? Why did they leave me? So we have to remember, Jenny, how a child views the world is not the way we think the child views the world.
God, that's absolutely true. And just to go back to the addiction part of it, when I went through my single phase, where I said I'm not going to date anybody for a year, just work on me, being a very sexual person myself, I used pornography as a daily tool to get to my own satisfactory place. And yeah. I noticed something, which was I almost became addicted to it. Like, I preferred it. And I was like, I don't need a guy. Like, I'm getting off. This is fine. I'm comfortable with this.
You know, Jenny, it becomes a coping mechanism. See, it's not about the porn anymore. It's not about the sexuality.
Mm.
It becomes a coping mechanism. When I'm stressed, let me go release this stress and act out. When I want to celebrate victories, let me go celebrate and act out.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, it becomes not sexual anymore. It becomes literally a coping mechanism. What I try to teach people that come to me is we need to change that coping mechanism. You need to start to trust people again instead of thinking that the pornography is going to solve your problems in a very convoluted way.
So well said. So well said. And this is the interesting thing that happened to me, because I still brag about myself being still a very sexual being. When I found the love of my life, Donnie, I noticed that, you know, because I still wouldn't have a problem if, like, you know, my partner wanted to watch a porno once in a while, whatever. But I noticed that I no longer went and looked for it, and how I was able to reach a level of intimacy with him that is unexplainable by letting go of the pornography.
Jenny, it makes perfect sense to me, and that's what I do with gentlemen, with men. You know, remember something, men don't know how to share feelings. They think that they're wimps, they think that they're wussies, pussies, they're not supposed to share feelings. But let me tell you something, and this is for all the men listening to your show. If you don't learn how to process and share your feelings in a healthy way, you're going to eventually act that out on your partner. And it doesn't mean you're going to act it out by running all the time to pornography. You may act it out with anger, not showing up at dinner when they want you to show up. Little things you're going to act out. Because if you don't talk about your feelings, you're going to act out those feelings. And this is, again, where pornography becomes a very bad substitute for intimacy. Because you know what? In these situations, you don't have to talk about your feelings. You don't have to share your feelings. You go and act them out. But it's certainly not the way to build closeness with your significant other.
Now, Tom, let me be a guy right now and say, yeah, well, my wife, she won't have sex with me, so she leaves me no choice.
Right. And I would tell that guy this. Look, do you make your wife a priority in your life? Do you show her that she's important? And I want to tell you, 95% of men, you start to show your wife that they're important, all of a sudden they're going to start to wear some sexier things to bed. You're going to start to see a change. But if you're not showing your wife that they're not important, a priority in your life, of course they're going to say, you know what, that's destructive entitlement. Let me tell you, Jenny, the truth. When we're victims to our spouse, to each other, we don't hear a word our spouse says or needs. We don't.
Wow.
We become victims to them. They become victims to us. And we have this what I call destructive entitlement. You see, I have the right to go to the strip clubs. I have the right to view porn. Look what she does to me. When you have two victims, nobody's listening, Jenny. Nobody's listening.
I mean, you are speaking the gospel here, my friend. I mean, you're so spot on and saying it so real, and hopefully people are hearing it also because it's so clear cut. But now let me ask you this. What about the people that are going, were you saying all pornography is bad? Like, if I have a healthy relationship with my wife, can we both watch it and jerk off together watching it?
Well, I wouldn't say jerk off together. I would say you can watch it to stimulate each other. But remember, the priority is the person in the bed near you. Now, if it's a stimulus to get yourself going, there's nothing wrong with that. But see, here's where pornography moves into that dangerous area, where it then becomes the substitute for your spouse.
That's right.
When it becomes the substitute for your spouse, you will find yourself, and many times this happens, Jenny, where all of a sudden the person is watching pornography without their spouse. Now again, it becomes the solution to sexual intimacy. That's where you get yourself in trouble with. If you're having some problems, you know, getting it off or stimulating each other, pornography could be used to do that with. But you have to be careful, because there's many people that fall into the addictive category, and those are the people that all of a sudden make their priority pornography, not their spouse.
Absolutely. Now let me ask you about kids and in today's generation. Of course, we had Hustler, Penthouse, whatever your dad's magazine was.
Right.
Because the access is so easy for our kids, what as a parent can we do to protect them?
You know, Jenny, the greatest thing I tell parents is, first of all, create a safe place for your children. Let your children share their feelings, whatever those feelings are. Feelings are not right and wrong. They're not true and false. If we don't create a safe place for our children to share their feelings, they'll solicit that information from the wrong people.
Absolutely.
Nobody wants that. And be curious with your children. Talk to them. Ask them what sites they're on, what they're doing. You know, I think every child in this world needs at least one person, just one, that gives a shit, that cares about how they feel, that cares about what they're doing. And if a child doesn't have somebody in their life that's curious, that really cares about their fears, their struggles, their sexual orientation, whatever that is, their curiosity with drugs, if they don't have somebody that shares that with them, that's a child like myself that will grow up with negative core beliefs. And believe me, Jenny, when you grow up with negative core beliefs, eventually you're going to act them out in destructive ways, and you're going to hurt those people you love the most. I know this from my own childhood.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's why I got myself into therapy, and I love it and talk about it always. Like, I'm such a firm believer. And since that, I've been able to pass down really making sure that my son's voice counts and his voice matters and his feelings matter. And
that's what you got to do, Jenny, just what you said. If a child doesn't feel like they matter, if they don't feel like they matter to somebody in their world, and what I did, similar to what you just said, is I created a safe place where my children can share their feelings, whatever those feelings were. It was a place I never had as a kid, Jenny, but I was able to do that for my children, to pass that on, to tell them, you know what, you can cry in your father's arms, I'm here for you. And I never had that. As a kid, if I should, God forbid, show emotions, my dad addressed me as this little girl. That's what he called me. So again, the messages we give our children are so important. They will determine the intimacy they have or not have, their parenting skills, the careers they choose. Childhood messages impact every part of the child's life.
It's so true. And I keep telling, like, everybody I know, since I've been dipping into my own core issues and healing those past core issues, I'm like, I said to my husband last night, I cannot believe how much your childhood affects the rest of your life.
Isn't it amazing? Listen, I tell couples all the time, you're not just in a relationship with your spouse, you're in a relationship with your spouse's childhood messages as well. I do this all the time. I make couples reverse roles and talk to each other. And I got to tell you, so many times we can't even do it. And the reason why is because what they say is not what the partner hears. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe how when somebody says A, the person says B. Why? They're filtered through their childhood messages. And unless you are aware of those filters, you need to be aware of the messages that impact your life, your adult life. If you're aware of that and you understand how your partner came to be who they are, you're going to create intimacy if you work on that piece.
Amen. And that's why my levels of intimacy have gotten deeper and deeper with my husband, because I was like, I need to break open that next layer and heal those past wounds in order for me to fall deeper in love with him. And it's working.
And people, listen, all of us come from our childhoods. If we saw our parents in situations where when there was conflict, one shut down, one ran away, one controlled or got angry, we're going to follow suit. We have to realize that conflict can be resolved in our adult life. Look, you know what makes a relationship? Not when everything's great, Jenny. What makes a relationship is when you have struggles. If you can work that out, that's the test of a really solid relationship. Not when everything is hunky-dory.
So
and everything's
true.
Wonderful. It's when you struggle. Now, when you struggle, you're going to time travel back to when you were a kid.
Yep.
And you're going to view how your parents handled struggles. Again, did somebody shut down, run away, get angry? All of these things will show up in your adult life. So you better be aware of that if you're going to make a more intimate relationship with your significant other.
God, this is so true. You have no idea how spot on you are, and I hope people are listening to what Tom has to say. I mean, just going into my own past, I did exactly what you did. I go, what did my mom do? My mom smiled through everything. Everything was always
right.
Fine.
You could hit me over the head. That's fine.
Yeah, right. And like my reality was so skewed because it was based off my mother's reaction, which she thought she was protecting me from, you know, the world
right.
around me.
Right.
When everything wasn't fine. But that smile made me believe that that was normal, and it's not.
And that's so true, Jenny. You know, as a child, as a young child, what you're seeing isn't what's happening. And you're questioning and getting confused. All of a sudden, you're saying to yourself, gee, Mom is acting like everything's fine. But there's a voice inside of me that's saying, wow, everything's not fine. You know, what's happening is not okay, but Mom's saying it's okay. So what happens is when our parents aren't congruent, when they don't say what they mean what they say, all of a sudden we start to question things. We start to question life, because who but our parents are our higher powers? They're our gods. They teach us to how we view the world, how the world views us. And if they're giving us questionable messages, like everything's okay, yet, you know, the roof is on fire, we start to question everything, and it
Absolutely.
Impacts every part of our life as we grow up.
And that's why I've also learned, and for parents listening, that if something's wrong, it's not necessarily you need to tell your child all of your business and your issues and the shit that's going on, but if it's like, let's say I have a work issue, Evan can see it on my face. And
exactly.
I used to go, nothing's wrong. He's like, yeah, there's something wrong. I'd be like, no, nothing. I learned to say, you know what? Someone's bugging me at work named David, and it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you, Evan. And it's just really making him understand. Because I think, again, kids take it on themselves.
Exactly. And you know what? A kid should be a kid, Jenny. They shouldn't be an adult. They shouldn't fix their parents' problems. They shouldn't be parentified. A child should just be a child. And what happens sometimes in bad relationships, the child senses there's something wrong at the top, and all of a sudden they become parentified. They try to fix the situation. That's where you get codependency from,
yep.
caretakers from, people pleasers from, because they're so connected on fixing someone else's problems that they lose themselves. They lose what they need in life.
Yep.
And this is what I find many times in the sessions that I run.
And then we find it at 45 after our second divorce.
Hey, you know what? 45 is, that's okay. You found it. That's what counts.
Tom Gagliano, I have to tell you what a pleasure it was talking to you. I could talk to you for hours. Can you tell?
Thank you, Jenny.
The website is theproblemwithme.com. You guys pick up his books. Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. Also, The Problem Was Me. I'm going to tweet these out so everyone can have your information, because you rocked. Come back again, okay, Tom?
You got it, Jenny. Thanks
for healing us. Thank you. Be right back, you guys, with some dirt.